This RRFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Right, hello New Zealand, welcome to another episode of Turn the Page. My name is Mark Pacey from the Wairarapa Archive, and today on this very cold and frosty day, I bring you three more of our stories from our past. Like I said, it was very cold this morning. I was riding to work, and instead of seeing a little puddle of water because we had a bit of rain, it was sort of a little sheet of ice. It's freezing. It's still cold now. It was not fun walking to the studio this morning. Anyway, let's not complain too much about that. Gumboot throwing, or welly wanging as it is known in England, can trace its origins back to the 1970s. It is thought to have first been played in West Country and quickly became a popular sport at carnivals, and it didn't take long for the event to make its way to New Zealand. It first seems to have been played in Masterton in 1977, which ACs took out the title in a match against staff from local station 2ZD in a showdown at Queen Elizabeth Park. The 1978 tournament would see these two rivals face off again. 2ZD were keen to show they had what it takes to be crowned the Gumboot champions, but this year there was a new team on the field. Four hefty fellows from the Wairarapa Times Age. The Times Age team comprised of Bob Donnelly, Gordon Kinvig, Dave Nielsen and Ivan McNichol. These newcomers wanted to prove that it wasn't just the outdoorsy JC's boys that could chuck a boot across a field. The JC's team of Glenn Sutherland, John Bunny, Jeff Tansley and Lou Davis had a title to defend and were confident they could do it. Not to be left behind, the 2ZD team of Roger Tonkin, Rex McKay, Barry Cook and Jim Van Isselrooy also wanted to prove they weren't just voices on a radio, they were a physical force to be reckoned with. The competition was straightforward. The team that made the greatest combined distance would be crowned the winner. It was a close thing. The JCs show they still had a powerful team. Glenn Sutherland had the longest individual throw of the competition. The JCs managed a respectable total distance between their champion throwers of the hurtled boot. Would it be enough to maintain the title of Gumboot Throwing Champions? The newspaper, and perhaps a slightly bias-leaning article, reported on the day's event. The Times Age team gained a combined distance of 92.3 metres. In the best of three throw-offs, miles behind, came the JC team with a distance of 91.7 metres. The boys from the radio, making weak excuse throughout, struggled to finish with a distance of 88.9 metres. It's a funny old world when 60 centimetres can be described as miles. But journalistic favouritism aside, the results were unanimous. The Times Age were the undisputed 1978 gumboot throwing champions. For a year, the Times Age team maintained bragging rights champions in the sport, but it was inevitable that this clash of welly wangers would happen again. At the end of 1979, the JCs would get their chance of revenge. They had been planning this for over a year, and on the day of the competition, they had several cards up their sleeves to ensure a victory. The Times Age newspaper reported on the underhand tactics that were employed by the opposition. Crude provocation, superior numbers, the introduction of various international professionals, and worst of all, a claim that the JC's team had somehow managed to suborn the judges and threaten the scorers into giving them a nod. The results were not surprising. JC's were crowned the victors, claiming back the trophy. The truth behind that darkest of wanging days may have been embellished and skewed by bitter journalists, but there was one honest, inspiring and educational comment that came from the event individual champion of the third place 2ZD, Tony Williams. Always let go of the boot when you throw. That's my secret. There you go. Actually, have I tried it? Seems like the sort of thing you would do in a country school, and I went to a country school. We certainly threw stuff. I'm just trying to think, did we ever throw a boot? I'll have to put that one down the long-term memory and see what comes back. In the meantime, here is our first piece of music. This was a request from a very special person, so of course they get favouritism. This is Shine Down, A Symptom of Being Human.
were kinda weird. Upside down and not all here. What's wrong with me and you is crystal clear. Sometimes I'm in a room where I don't belong, and the house is on fire and there's no alarm, and the walls are melting too. How about you? Don't worry, it's all just a symptom of being human. Upside down and not all here. Right or wrong, it's all so crystal clear. Sometimes I'm in a room where I don't belong, and the house is on fire and there's no alarm, and the walls are melting too. How about you? I've never been the favorite, thought I'd seen it all, till I got my invitation to symptom of being human.
Just passing through, passengers on a ship of being human.
That is an awesome song. Awesome band too. And I was just checking my phone. It is all of 1 degree outside. Oi. All right. There was great excitement on the 1st of April 1967 when the Ashton Circus came to Masterton, reported as easily one of the best ever to visit White at Upper, though delighted young and old with its variety of acts. In all, 17 different events were held over the course of the show. From animal antics to comical clowns, there was something for everyone. Before the event started, residents and bewildered traffic officer got a taste of what was to come. As it was April Fool's Day, the organisers and some of the locals decided to have a bit of fun. Motorists were startled when, instead of just seeing Officer Steve Clements helping direct traffic, he had a helper with him, a rather large, trunked helper, being one of the elephants from the circus. The entertainment started with a pair of lions showing off their agility. To be more accurate, it showed the agility of one of the lions and the stubbornness of the other. The trick was for the lions to jump over a stick that was balanced between two chairs. While the first lion did this with no complaint, the second decided he would rather keep his paws on the ground and walked around the obstruction. When prompted to go back the other way, he simply walked back around it again. The tamer decided it not best to contest this behaviour. The hitches continued with the next act, the performance of the Russian Samoyed dogs and their trainer. Despite some misinterpretations of her command, most did what passed of them, all bar one, who only responded to politeness. While the rest of the pack mostly followed the instructions, this proper pooch would only follow her commands if she used please to the end of each one. Then it was time to send in the clowns. They were regarded on the night of being not a particular high standard. The newspaper reporting on their act said, the wit of the clowns, while welcome when it appeared, was generally not far above a fair standard. A polite way of saying it was mediocre. The rest of the night was filled with trapeze acts of extraordinary coordination. The skill of the aerial acrobats was awe-inspiring, with one even doing the exercise blindfolded. This event would have been perfect except for a rather unwelcome reappearance of a particular performer. And this is quoted from the newspaper, all the aerial acts were top-class performances, with perhaps one disappointment being the distraction of the antics of a clown during the Flying Ashton act. It was not a good night to be a clown. One of the daring acts of the night was an outstanding trapeze feat, Jonas and Nikki's dental act. While Jonas was suspended upside down, he supported Nikki, who was holding on with just his teeth clamped down on a rod. And all this was done with no safety net. The night continued with Russian Cossack riding, ballerina acts and horse riding. As the events closed out, the spectators made their way home and the animals were locked up for the night, ready to head out on the road the next day. Or so the organisers thought. During the night, while the town slept, as well as most of the animals, one mischievous marsupial decided he wanted to see a bit more beyond the confines of his enclosure and escaped. When doing the rounds at 2 a.m, a circus member was horrified to see the kangaroo was missing. Thinking it had been stolen, an alarm was given, and the search parties were sent out, and he was eventually found after much searching, happily nestled in with the horses. Right, time for another bit. So this is one of my bits of music. It's not. I changed that. I was going to play one of my dreary pieces of music and decided, no, I'm not going to play a dreary piece of music. It's Monday. We're getting into a new week. So this is one. It came from a weird dream I had. This is... Actually, it reminds me, because we used to watch... I have this vivid memory. When I was 10, 11, 12, somewhere around that age, there was me, there was my parents, and there was my grandparents all watching this one documentary about this one group, and we all liked them. So there are three generations of us all liked this group. So this is You Win Again by the great Bee Gees.
Back.
And that was You Win Again by the Bee Gees. Yes, I love my heavy metal and stuff, but I've always loved the Bee Gees. Really good group. Very, very talented. And they got their start in Australia, I believe, if I get facts right there. Oh, on to our last story already. In the mid-1970s, government departments were spread wide. Inland Revenue alone operated from five different sites in the area. It was decided that a purpose-built building to accommodate as many of the government departments as possible would be the ideal scenario. But how to make it? Inland Revenue had a decent-sized staff, as did many of the other departments. A governmental architect came up with a plan that would it would be an impressive building. Six stories of offices would eventually tower above central Masterton. The plans were set, and some of the tenants were already earmarked to move in once the building was complete. A site was selected and everything was ready for construction to begin. In October 1975, Masterton firm Dixon and McKinley were awarded the contract. It would be a tame building for the major cities, but Masterton, this would be a behemoth of a structure taller than any other building in the town. By March the following year, the site was a hive of activity. Concrete was being poured and steelwork was rising towards the heavens. 3 months later, the maze of steelwork had increased so much that workmen became vague silhouettes when viewed from the road, their details masked by all the metalwork. Work progressed throughout the year, but it was going to be a long build. Such a tall structure with a decent footprint took up an enormous amount of steel, concrete, and labour. By April of 1977, the new building was four stories high and was described as the Times Age as becoming steadily more imposing. While the building continued to go up, it was also being fitted out in the lower floors. While in the early stages it was a shell of a building, by early 1978, the first five floors now looked more like a finished building with windows and walls nearing completion. The date that was set for the conclusion of the main build was October 31st. Negotiations had been taking place with proposed tenants. It was Inland Revenue that would be awarded the most space with two floors all to themselves. While the concrete and steelwork continued, attention began to shift towards the interiors. Suspended ceilings, wiring, heating, partitions and floor coverings all still had to be completed before the Halloween line. On May 6, 1978, the final pour of concrete on the government building took place. Workers battled icy winds six stories up. They finished the last 30 metres of pouring. The concrete had to be pumped from 86 feet below. But with this last pour occurring in May, they were still well on schedule to have the building ready by the completion date. With the main heavy construction finished, it was the smaller fitting out that came next. This took several months, and the departmental building's first occupiers started to move in early 1979. It was not quite a smooth shift. While some areas were complete and ready for their new residents, others were still being worked on. Some office workers found it going a bit tough. Concentrating on tasks at hand wasn't helped by the sound of power tools and the unwanted incursions of dust and mud from the work going on outside. The car parking area hadn't been sealed by this stage and became muddy after rains. But in due course, all the issues were rectified and Masterton's newest downtown office block had its grand opening on March 29th, 1979. Mayor Frank Cody hailed the new building as a significant milestone for the town. The government's departmental building must be the most significant commercial or administrative building erected in Masterton and is likely to remain so for some years. The building now housed a public area for the Department of Social Welfare, Department of Labour and Māori Affairs on the ground floors, Department of Social Welfare on the first floor, Department of Health, New Zealand Forest Services and Ministry of Transport on the second floor, Inland Revenue on the third and fourth floors and the Ministry of Works and Development on the fifth floor. Over coming decades, the government departments consolidated and are now primarily based in the bigger cities, the likes of Masterton no longer having offices. While the government departments may have moved out, others have moved in, and Masterton's tallest building continues to provide businesses a fitting place to operate from. I know it because that's where I went to get my COVID jab. That was an experience. All right, last piece of music now, and again, keeping with all our soundtrack stuff, this is one I've been listening to a lot of as I've been doing my writing. which didn't go well this morning because it's so cold. Got to work even though I put the heater on and everything and sat down. I was like, right, let's get some writing done. My hands were so cold. I wasn't typing fast. And as you look up, every second word is underlined in red saying, that's a word. So it's not a word. Did I type that? So yeah, not a great morning for doing writing, but still got to listen to some great music. And this is one of them. I have played this before, or if I haven't, someone else at Arrow has played it. And if they have, well done. But I imagine it probably is me. So this, I picked this one because it's one of the shorter pieces. The others are 8 minutes plus, so we won't do that. So this one's just over 4 minutes. This is, again, Hans Zimmer. This is from the Last Samurai soundtrack, and this is Safe Passage. And that was Safe Passage from Last Samurai. I actually haven't seen that movie. It doesn't really interest me. It's about, you know, Japanese history. I was like, oh, I don't know. It looks a little bit westernized for my liking. So what I'm going to do now, I've got a couple of jokes. I was looking them up. I thought, well, what's the topics we've done? Which one best suits jokes? I thought, well, let's just do some animal jokes or circus jokes. So I've got a few here, one of which I'm definitely not going to read on the air because I probably won't be invited back. I can't believe that when he showed up on the main search, the things that come up when you search for jokes, definitely not appropriate. So I will read the other ones and concentrate so I don't accidentally read that one too. So did you hear about the fire at the circus? It was intense. Why did the elephant leave the circus? He was tired of working for peanuts. What do you call a pea that works in the circus? A trapeze artist. And why is it hard to hire a clown? Well, they have big shoes to fill. So there you go. You got four this time. You're being spoilt. I said that other one in the middle there. Yeah, I'm not going to read that one. It could be construed as being funny, but you know, this is a family show. I don't do any naughty later or anything. I'm not going to say it. So that's me done for the week. Like I said, if you're still at home and you're thinking about heading out, yeah, definitely dress. It's still, what does my phone tell me? Yeah, apparently it's still 1 degree outside. Woohoo. So it is cold. It's very cold. So dress warm and everything. Look after yourselves when you go out. Watch out for ice and stuff, because like I said, there was ice when I was coming to work this morning. There was white everywhere. Yeah, going to head out in your car, maybe get the hose out. It's hello winter. It's taken a while, but we've got our first real cold day here as well. So have a good one. Look after yourselves. And unless I get facts wrong, we will see you on, we'll catch you on Monday. Unless it's a holiday or something else happens, I should be here. So look after yourselves and we'll see you then. Catch you later.